This is Clutch Fans.
Oh! From the parking lot!
The Rockets are going to Boston. How sweet it is!
By the way, shout out to the Clutch Fans.
You're listening to the Clutch Fans Podcast, an open conversation for Houston Rockets diehards.
Houston Rockets is unbeatable.
I'm ready to get on Clutch Fans.
Now, here's your host, the man who would have drafted Harold Miner over Robert Horry, Dave Hardesty.
Welcome into the podcast. That was quite a game. The Rockets exploded for 129 points in New Orleans, beating the Pelicans by 30 points in what was Boogie Cousins' debut, what everybody was watching this game for that was outside of Houston. But Lou Williams pretty much stole his thunder. 27 points in his Houston Rockets debut after he was acquired by the Rockets on Tuesday from the LA Lakers for Corey Brewer and a first-round pick. Williams wasn't even expected to play, and then he was expected to play just a handful of minutes. He explodes for 27 points in 25 minutes, hits 7 3-point shots. My guest today is the esteemed David Wiener. You know him as Beamathug on Twitter, on Clutch Fans. Just a great, knowledgeable fan who is a lawyer and knows the ins and outs of the cap, and trade deadline is definitely his time. So I appreciate you coming on, David.
Wait, the trade deadline was today?
Yeah, exactly. You know, this was the Rockets were busy. I mean, I think we expected to see something happen, but, you know, they made sort of the bigger move on Tuesday, and then they made two minor trades on deadline day. But before we get into that, I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about this game, what we saw in sort of Lou Williams' debut and Boogie's debut for the Pelicans. Now, this was a fun game to watch, but really just a fun game for Rockets fans.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you always love when the shiny new object, the new team acquisition comes right out of the gate and has a fantastic performance, as Lou Williams did. But not just him, the whole team. I mean, Eric Gordon had a great game. Just up and down the roster, everyone played well. Although, I it was mostly the Rockets playing well, but you also have to factor in the opponent that, as great as Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins are, it's their first game playing together. There's definitely a roster imbalance in New Orleans right now. They traded out a couple of their top guards to get Boogie. So there's going to be a feeling out process there for them. I don't think they were the most competitive they could be tonight. So we were catching an opponent in an awkward position, and we thoroughly took advantage.
Yeah. I think what was interesting about this, though, and again, you're not going to see Lou Williams go 7 of 11 every night for the Rockets, but it certainly created an amazing first impression, is the Rockets have a legitimate bench now. I mean, they started Nene in this game basically to go up against DeMarcus Cousins. So they brought Capella off the bench. He was outstanding, 7 of 8 from the field, 15 points in just 19 minutes. Montrezl Harrell was super effective, 10 points, 5 of 6 shooting. And, of course, Lou Williams and Eric Gordon were the top two scorers for the Rockets. 79 of the team's 129 points were scored by the bench in this game, which kind of tells you that the starters really didn't have the greatest game in this one. But when everything's clicking for the Rockets with the offensive weapons they have, this is a very dangerous team.
Oh, absolutely. I know Harden did not have his best game, but he didn't need to. And I think maybe the Pelicans' defense was focusing in on him. And he was just surgical finding shooters, though. So even when his shot isn't falling, he's more likely than not to find the open man. And guys were knocking down shots.
So what did you think, by the way, of this trade? I mean, obviously we saw the first impression. It was against the Pelicans. They're a team that's in transition as well. So we don't know exactly what we're going to end up seeing long-term out of Lou Williams. But what did you think of this trade? Why did the Rockets make this move? What are the pros and cons of the deal, in your opinion?
Sure. I think first and foremost, the Rockets were looking to upgrade the Corey Brewer rotation spot. And while Lou Williams positionally does not fit exactly with what Brewer was giving them, he's a vastly superior player, just an elite bench scorer. I mean, the Rockets now have the two best bench scorers in the league. Excellent three-point shooter, a guy who can draw fouls, get to the free throw line, really possesses the skill set that this system is looking for in its guards. And, you know, personally, I thought that a fourth guard spot was maybe one of the biggest needs for the team, especially with Beverly's and Gordon's injury histories.
Yeah.
That the odds of all three of them staying completely healthy throughout the rest of the year in playoffs is not, you know, 95% plus, that they really needed that fourth guard, and now they just have as solid a four guard rotation as there is in the league. You know, it's not I'm not putting it there with Curry and Thompson, but just depth wise, those are four really good guards. But on the flip side, you know, they did have to give up that first round pick, and while Dave, I know you love just giving away first round picks,
yeah, right.
I'm a little apprehensive about that. There are definitely risks, but the way this team is playing, and if they continue the way they play tonight, odds are that pick is going to be no lower than, is going to be no higher than 25th, and, you know, more likely than not, it'll be 27 or 28. And the guys in the draft you're going to get there are not necessarily difference makers, especially when the team still has two second-round picks. Maybe they can trade up a little bit, or they find another, you know, serviceable backup. But I don't think the next superstar was going to come out of the 28th pick of the draft. But what are your thoughts, Dave, as someone who I know has very strong opinions about trading out first-round picks?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm always disappointed that when they move their pick, but at the same time, you know, I, for example, last year I was crushed that they didn't end up with that 12th pick. It's a unique situation. We've gone back and forth on that many times. I think that was a mistake, but I look at it as, hey, you could have flipped that pick for a player, and that's what they've done here. I mean, I'm disappointed because, you know, I think the draft time, that whole June period, for me is like Christmas, like sort of the trade deadline and free agency is for you and all cap matters. But I mean, they've got a player, not just a rental for this year. They've got him under contract for next year in Lou Williams, and he fits the style that they play. I agree with you. Think they needed a fourth guard. I thought it was sort of the 1B as far as top need for the team. I thought they could have used a wing that was a little bit more defensive minded. But I think in adding this guy in Lou Williams, they've got filled their fourth guard need. They have a scoring boost off of the bench. They needed a three-point shooter. I think this is a terrific addition for the team. And, you know, you look at him hitting 7 three-pointers in this game against the Pelicans. You have to go back 17 games to see Corey Brewer amass 7 three-pointers made. So, you know, I like Corey Brewer. I have nothing against him. He just wasn't a right fit. And I think Daryl Morey said just as much on Sports Talk 790. He said flat out, some of the guys we, you know, more or less moved out just weren't fits for this team as far as shooting. Now we bring in Lou Williams and we have that. And they know that that's the key ingredient to Harden, you know, having this MVP season is having these shooters around him and the space that it creates. So, I think it's a great trade, whether you lose the first round pick or not. You know, as you mentioned, it's going to be in the 25 to 30 range we expect. That's not a great pick. You know, the greatest first round pick, guaranteed contract. You're going to have some second round picks to deal with this year. I think you're still in a decent position in the draft. I love the move. And I said that even before, you know, he exploded for 27 points. I just think that you know, you've added a rotation piece that is legit. Helping this offense and fits D'Antoni's style.
Yep. No, I think we're on the same page. You know, shockingly, we agree on something.
Yeah.
But you know, another aspect of the trade is the Corey Brewer component. That, you know, let's be real for a second here. That you know, in a vacuum, if the Rockets were to just trade Corey Brewer, you know, a lot of teams would be asking for a second round pick or something just to take his contract.
Correct.
Because he is owed $7.6 million next year. So if you factor in kind of the you know, sort of negative trade value, the fact that, you know, quote unquote, all it took was a first round pick to unload Brewer's contract and get a player of Williams' caliber, you know, it's almost like you were just giving up 2 seconds or something.
But you know what, though? I almost, and I'll bounce this off you to see what you think. Maybe the Rockets did pay a slight premium, because when you look at the market, first round picks didn't really move. I mean, certainly the one, you know, that was traded for Cousins. I mean, Cousins is a superstar player, you know, has risk involved. Nerlens Noel really didn't net a first round pick. You don't expect Dallas to be outside of that 1 to 18 range, or excuse me, inside the 1 to 18 range this year. So, you know, maybe with teams really not giving up first round picks, maybe the Rockets did pay a little bit of a premium by giving one up.
It's quite possible. I definitely think that it was a, you know, I don't know if market inefficiency is the right phrase, but I think that the Rockets front office realized that the rest of the league was both coveting first round picks so much and also being so apprehensive about trading them, that combined with the fact that they knew they were picking at the back end of the first round, they realized if they were willing to offer it up, they could really get something done, which is why they were able to get the Lakers to pull the trigger on a trade 2 days before the trade deadline. And I will take a moment here, especially in the new CBA. You know, several years ago, it used to be, well, you know, an early second round pick was probably more valuable than a late first round pick. That's not necessarily the case anymore. I think even the 30th pick of the draft is a more valuable asset than the 31st pick, in part because with the 30th pick in the draft, you can lock in a player on a 4-year contract, two of those being team options, at a dirt cheap salary relative to the rest of the league, where that player has to play for you for 4 years if you want him to. With the 31st pick, there's no requirement that that player play for you for more than 1 year, unless you're willing to pay a premium to keep him on a longer deal. And if guys like KJ McDaniels a couple years ago with Philadelphia decide, I'm going to bet on myself, I'm just going to take the required tender, 1 year non-guaranteed, play it out, and then I'm going to go cash in free agency, you know, teams are worried about that threat. So that's why even the 28th pick of the draft is going to be a lot more valuable than maybe even two good second rounders. So those first round picks do carry with them a significant value. I just think the Rockets' thinking was maybe the rest of the league is valuing that maybe a little bit more than they should, and they did what they needed to do to grease the skids to get a good player.
Yeah, and you're right about good player. I'm just thrilled that this team now has so many options. You know, again, it was against the Pelicans, but I looked at, you know, what we saw out there with Gordon and Williams running together and the options that they'll have, the combinations they'll be able to run with those four guards, Beverly and Harden as well. It's exciting. I think D'Antoni has a lot of options. Rockets made a couple of...
But Dave, can Lou Williams play defense?
Yeah, right. And, of course, that's in reference to ESPN being extremely critical of the Rockets' move. I think that was Brian Windhorst, Chauncey Billups, and our own Tracy McGrady giving grades ranging from C to D from a Rockets perspective on that trade, and they all focused on Lou Williams' poor defense. But, of course, that's not why the Rockets acquired him. There was a certain purpose, you know, a method to their madness that was overlooked in that analysis. So,
to be honest, I mean, just to be fair, he is a poor defender.
Yes.
And that will continue to be a weakness and maybe an exacerbated weakness for the team.
Well, he's small
for
a two
guard. Just so his offense more than makes up for it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a small two guard. He's not going to be locking down any ones or any twos or anything like that, but he is a very talented offensive player who can score in a hurry. And I think, you know, this is not a new development. I think his 3-point shot has improved, but he's done this for years as far as being an offensive spark. So I think it's a great addition to the team. They made a couple other moves as well. And I think, you know, they were sort of in limbo as far as making this trade official. There was a reason, I think, for that. No other deal came about as far as linking that trade to a three-team deal. But they did make a couple of separate moves. They sent Tyler Ennis to the Lakers for Marcelo Huertas, and the Rockets waived Huertas, even though there is already a appreciation thread for him on the board. And they also moved KJ McDaniels to the Brooklyn Nets for essentially nothing. Brooklyn absorbed his $3.3 million salary. Can you explain to us, to the average fan, to even the most advanced fan, why would they make these two moves that essentially, you know, as far as the roster, did nothing for them?
Sure. First, I'll start by taking a step back real quick. But you referenced kind of a larger trade, of maybe using them in a larger trade. And something I had hypothesized, and I think it's consistent with you know, some of the reports you were hearing from Woj and Mark Stein about the Rockets looking to maybe acquire another player in the $10 to $12 million range. And at first, you know, that kind of baffled me. I didn't think the Rockets could do that without giving up some pieces they probably weren't willing to trade. And, you know, it then occurred to me that, well, if the Brewer-Williams trade had not officially gone through yet, they could actually have combined KJ McDaniels, Tyler Ennis, and Corey Brewer's salaries to do kind of a three-team big trade where they get Lou Williams still and also get a $10 to $12 million player. Unfortunately, I'm sure they exhausted all options, but they were unable to consummate such a trade. I personally was a little disappointed. I had grand visions of maybe a Wilson Chandler or someone of that ilk, them being able to get someone like that. But alas, it didn't work. So they then moved on to the two trades that you mentioned, Dave. I guess first I'll touch on the KJ McDaniels trade. Unfortunately, it just never worked for KJ in Houston. I wish they'd given him more of a chance, especially last season when the Rockets were just playing terrible. I thought there was no way McDaniels could have done any worse than Brewer. This year, Brewer had his moments. It was defensible playing him over KJ, but it just wasn't going to work. I think this trade is an indication that the Rockets would not have picked up McDaniels' team option for next year.
Sure.
For $3.7 million. That also means if they weren't going to pick up the option, that means they couldn't have traded him on draft night or this summer. They would just lose him for nothing. So he would, if you're just looking at him, a guy who's not playing and he's only a trade asset, well, after today, then he's not even that. So I think they found a team willing to take his salary. I think they even got some cash from Brooklyn, although I don't know how much. But the biggest thing that trade did was it actually takes the Rockets back below the salary cap. So that opened up about $3.3 million in cap room, which is going to be significant. We'll talk about it more in a minute, but that's going to really help them for the rest of the season if they want to add more salary between now and the playoffs. The Ennis trade was about as small an incremental move as you can make. I think they gave Ennis the third point guard job ahead of Bobby Brown, there really wasn't an appreciable difference between him and Bobby Brown. And he had a salary that was, you know, large enough where they held on to him as a trade asset for salary filler. Nothing was happening there. So they traded him for Huertas, who makes slightly less than him. And then they're cutting Huertas, as you mentioned. Really all it does is open up another 200,000-300,000 in cap room. And now that could be an important minor increment, but it really was, the move was just totally about getting just a little bit more cap room to use on free agents the rest of the season.
Well, you know, it's I guess it's interesting because they've made these deals, so now they're going to be in a situation where you're estimating, I think, around 3.5, 3.6 million more or less cap room. So
yep.
They're going to, Daryl made mention that they'll have more money than all the other contenders. I believe you tweeted something out about them having a few teams, I think OKC being one of them, having a trade exception as far as claiming players off waivers but not outright signing them. And we know they're going to be at least making a first push for Andrew Bogut if when he is bought out by the Philadelphia 76ers. He was traded there in the Nerlens Noel deal, Nerlens going to Dallas. So we know they're going to be pursuing Bogut. I'm not surprised they're pursuing Bogut in the sense that they're going for the biggest fish they can get. as far as, you know, signing and adding talent to the team. Bogut is a skilled, experienced, big. But I know they love their situation at their bigs rotation. Daryl Morey even said as much. They love Capella. They don't want his time eaten into. But at the same time, you've got Nene and you've got Montrezl Harrell. Harrell has been pretty much outstanding when he has played as of late. So somebody's going to lose time if you do add a Bogut. I personally don't think Bogut's coming here. I think he's already shot the Rockets down once. I don't see what has necessarily changed, even though there's a light years difference between the Mavericks and the Rockets, you know, compared to when he made that decision this past summer. I just think he ends up going somewhere else.
You might be right. I mean, now, in fairness, at the time he picked Dallas over Houston, you know, Houston was coming off a disaster of a season, and no one was expecting them to come out the gates like they did.
True,
but they're firmly entrenched in that three seed.
Yeah, and that's true. But I believe he has said that D'Antoni's system is not a good fit for him in his mind. Now, that may just be a comment he made at the time. I just tend to think for whatever reason that there's, you know, maybe some past history, some bad blood. I remember certainly back in the old, when the Rockets were going for the record on three-point shooting, he was not at all happy with Houston and consider them a rival. Of course, this is business. It's a different deal. I just, in my head, have the impression he's not coming here, but we do know the Rockets are going to pursue him. I think, as you mentioned, Wilson Chandler, I was a little surprised Denver really didn't do a whole lot. I was thought for sure they would move him. I tend to think that, you know, with his player option that he had on that deal at the $12 million range, I wouldn't be surprised if the Rockets tried to tie Lawson in that situation where they were looking for him to waive that player option or, you know, decline that or something to that effect, if that's even possible. You can tell me. But that deal didn't come about, or they certainly love the Lou Williams trade more than the Wilson Chandler option.
Yeah, I agree too. And part of it was, you know, I think word came out, Woj tweeted right before the deadline that Denver was putting together a Godfather offer for Paul George. And I have to imagine that Wilson Chandler was probably part of that offer. So they may have just been saying no to the Rockets' overtures, in part because they didn't want to foreclose their chance of getting Paul George. But, you know, from the reports, I think they were told that, even if Denver could put the package together, George wasn't going to re-sign in Denver. So they, you know, that kind of flittered out kind of at the 11th hour before the trade deadline.
You know, Boston was a team, I think, that really surprised me that they didn't make it, a move with all the assets they have. But I personally agree with what they're doing up to this point. I think I know it's getting a bit controversial and you know, perhaps he's going to face some asset depreciation. But, I mean, those Nets picks that they own are just golden. I think that they're going to eventually be able to get exactly what they want when they want it. But, you know, they may get into the playoffs facing a team like Cleveland and wishing they had a Paul George or a Jimmy Butler or something of that nature. But I think right now, I think they made the right decision personally.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of those assets could be burning a hole in Danny Ainge's pocket. And I think Bobby Marks made the good point that, well, you know, unfortunately now that the trade deadline's passed, some of the kind of key salary filler contracts that Boston would have used in a kind of a huge trade, Amir Johnson and Jonas Jerebko, neither of those guys can be traded anymore. So that could even if someone said, okay, we're ready to trade Jimmy Butler or Paul George or another superstar, it might be a little more difficult for Boston to, you know, put together enough salary. Probably not. I think they have the contracts to get it done, but, you know, those were helpful tools that are no longer available to them. And they got, you know, multiple first round picks already playing overseas. If I were a Boston fan, I'd be a little frustrated they didn't do something, but I wouldn't be upset that they didn't, you know, try to give up those Brooklyn picks to make a run at a superstar and maybe grossly overpay.
Okay. So it's February 24th. We've got until, correct me if I'm wrong, March 1st to see who gets waived. Those guys have to be off rosters for you to, you can sign them after March 1st, if I'm not mistaken, but they have to be off the roster, for you to be able to sign them after March 1st to add them for the playoffs. Is that correct?
Yeah, they have to be waived by March 1st.
Okay. So
you can sign them at any point as long as they were waived by March 1st.
Okay, exactly. So, you know, we know Andrew Bogut is target A. Who do you think is a possibility out there? We've heard names like Terrence Jones. We know Darren Williams is getting waived. Rockets don't have interest. Looks like he's heading to Cleveland anyway. Anybody out there, you know, that intrigues you at all?
At the moment, not really. I mean, a guy who might be useful, as much as probably a lot of Rockets fans don't like him, would be maybe like a Matt Barnes, who got waived by Sacramento.
What?
You know, you're looking for defense at the wing position. You know, if there's one thing Matt Barnes can give you, it's defense at the wing position. Maybe not much else.
That would be awkward, though, adding Matt Barnes to this team. Well, I mean, seriously, would that not be awkward? I mean, you've got James Harden's mom watching games. I mean, I know they probably put that behind them, but that's just awkward to me. And you know, probably my most hated rival out there as far as, like, just a guy who's always seems to be causing problems in Rocket games. But I'd have a tough time accepting Matt Barnes as a Houston Rocket personally.
Yeah, I mean, he may not even be a fit. I think his three-point shots hasn't been great. I could be wrong about that. They may have taken a nosedive. It's really one of those situations where, other than Bogut and Darren Williams, no notable names have really come out as, okay, well, these guys are definitely getting bought out. So it may be a few more days before the news starts leaking of, oh, well, player X is in discussions for a buyout. It's also possible that the Rockets could reach out to other front office and go, hey, guys, we have some cap room. If we pay more than the league minimum for your player and enable you to set off some of the salaries, so if a player gets waived and he signs for a lot of money somewhere else, his old team can offset some of the new salary, and they actually save money that way. So maybe that will entice some other teams to waive a player if they know the Rockets are going to pick him up, are going to sign him for, you know, $3 million, as opposed to them going for the vet minimum somewhere else. It actually saves the player's old team a little bit of money. But maybe they talk to other front offices about that.
Yeah, I could see teams pretty much keeping those cards close to the vest as far as who they are considering buying out, because, you know, leading up to the trade deadline, they're trying to deal those players. And if teams know they're looking at buyouts, there's no need to try to acquire those players via trade, give up any assets. You know, before I let you go, I want to ask you a question, and it's just related to this summer. Obviously, we're focused on the Rockets' run. They are already at 41 wins, matching last year's total to just 18 losses. They look terrific and sort of emerging as, you know, a team that could at least, you know, give a good fight to a Golden State or San Antonio, but that remains to be seen. We'll see how that plays out. But the summer, and we always talk about the summer and the cap room situation. I believe the Rockets could have, you've mentioned before, I think 12 to 13 million. But given their situation and the players they have on their roster, they could pretty much easily create max cap room if they wanted. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I would not say easily. It will be tough. I think even if they were to get off of Lou Williams' salary or Trevor Ariza's salary, you know, then you're maybe talking about the lowest tier max. And that's if you were to trade Trevor Ariza and Lou Williams for nothing, no salary in return. Now you're talking about Nerlens Noel money or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope money. Even then, you're not at Gordon Hayward money. So you'd really be stripping down to bare bones. And I don't think they want to trade a guy like Beverly, who's going to be making only $5.5 million next year as a starting point guard. I think that's too valuable a slot to just dump for a little extra cap room.
Okay. So perhaps they couldn't get to that true max cap room, but I guess what I'm saying is, to create, let's say, to Nerlens Noel money, moving an Ariza or moving a Lou Williams for nothing probably wouldn't be difficult. You don't have to necessarily give up assets to unload those.
I think now that Brewer's contract is off the books, I don't think there's a bad contract on the Rockets roster at all.
Yeah, and that's
every player either has value or is so dirt cheap they can be tossed in a trade somewhere.
And it seems like they've got one more year that way. Like that's, you know, they, after this season, they've got one more year where you've got Ariza, Lou Williams coming off. Capella's going to be a restricted free agent, I believe, after that year. You've got about, you know, like I said, a year and a half to run with this sort of setup before you make some changes.
Right. And again, you know, you're talking about 12, 13 million in cap room. You could easily get that into the, you know, maybe into the $20 million range if you're willing to part with Lou Williams or Trevor Ariza and add in that other, you know, maybe not superstar, but other Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon level piece to join your core. And you can go forward next year with that as your team. But you're right. Come 2018, you know, it's basically Harden, Anderson, Gordon, Beverly, Decker, and everyone else is going to get paid.
Yeah, and some second-round picks, perhaps.
Yeah.
Hey, that's David Wiener. I mean, any final thoughts on the trade deadline? Anything that surprised you, shocked you before I let you go?
I will say this about the Rockets' cap room. If, you know, the Bogets of the world just pick another contender and don't come to Houston, or even if one of them does, don't sleep on the Rockets allocating at least a little bit of that cap room to go out and get a young guy. Maybe they find some really good D-League player. Maybe they find a guy who's playing overseas maybe and sign him late in the season. But, you know, maybe let's use D-League as an example. Maybe Gary Payton II.
Sure.
Maybe they want to re-sign him. With cap room, they can sign a guy to a 3 or 4 year deal. So maybe you get a guy and say, look, we know the prorated minimum for you is only, you know, $100,000 or something. We're going to give you $1 million, but you need to sign for 4 years and the last 3 years are non-guaranteed. That gives dirt cheap salary. You see how that prospect plays. Maybe you have a trade asset, non-guaranteed salary for next year. But it gives you one more, you know, lottery ticket there. So that cap room is not necessarily all allocated for Andrew Bogut. There are different things they can do, and also
kind of like what they did
nothing,
with Beasley, correct? Like with what they did with Michael Beasley.
Yeah, exactly. They had a little bit of room. They were able to sign him. And even if they don't sign anyone, they can go into the draft with $3.5 million of cap room. It gives them a little bit of wiggle room if they need to pull a draft night trade. Now, it's not significant, but it gives them a little more flexibility than they would otherwise have. And if you're talking about getting this at the expense of two players that weren't in your rotation and weren't going to play for you anyway, I think the Rockets, are all things considered, are in a better position in that regard than they were yesterday.
That's the inside of David Wiener. David, I really appreciate you doing this. Great stuff as always. And you can follow David on Twitter or on Clutch Fans at BeamaThug. Always a great follow. Always adds insight that you really hadn't thought of, at least I haven't thought of at times, on just the Rockets cap situation and the different angles that they could go. And at times seems to be in Daryl Morey's head. So it's always a great follow. Thanks again, David. I appreciate you doing this.
My pleasure as always, Dave.